Hello everyone, welcome to Cloud Cover Show. And this is Haixi. I'm not your common host. Neither Chris or Nick could be here today. Chris is too busy and Nick is too relaxed. Mm-hmm. So, but today we have a very good show. I'm glad to have Mr. Vlad Vinogradsky. Did I pronounce that right?
Awesome.
Okay. He's the senior PM of the API management team. He will be talking about API management. Yep. He will introduce what it is and what we can do with it.
Cool. Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm Vlad Vinogradsky. I am a principal PM on Azure API management team. And I'm here to talk about the new service we launched at TechAd, which is called Azure API Management. So I'm going to talk briefly about the API management and why customers might need it. And then I'm going to show you the demo of the product. And that would be sort of what we're going to do today. So, you know, APIs are becoming quickly a very important part of the strategy for businesses, from startups to mature enterprises. And I don't think it's a controversial statement, right? It's, there is enterprise mobility, there is partner transactions, there is, consumers with mobile devices that they bring to work and use at home, and they expect to get information anytime, any place, on any device. So, however, starting an API program, exposing those APIs for organizations is not that easy, right? So, there is many things that you need to start thinking about, and larger the organization, more legacy backend services you have, harder problems you're facing. And it starts with adaptation of what you have in terms of your backend services, because you want to basically create a facade exposing just the functionality you want to expose in the way that is modern and easy to consume. And for the most part, organizations have multiple services, sometimes in dozens or hundreds, written in different technologies, different styles, at different time points, using formats they may not be modern, URL schemes that are inconsistent, protocols that are not used anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So adaptation is the first step. Takes a lot of work. Normally, ordinarily, right? You actually have to do some development. Second thing is onboarding, right? So how do you get developers to use the APIs you just exposed? Well, you have to actually provide them with some documentation, mm-hmm. Which describes the APIs and allows them to quickly get to know how to use those APIs. They need to have some kind of subscription ability, so ability to subscribe to those APIs, right? To get authorized to use them. They need to be able to play with those APIs, make successful calls to the API literally in 5 minutes, or they just move on to a different API, provided by a different organization. So there is competition for developers, and developers like good documentation. They like ability to get to code really quickly. Then, as soon as they start using, you start to worry about the protecting of your assets, right? You need to make sure that your APIs are not misused or abused, and that developers who are using the APIs are authorized to do so, that they stay within their assigned quotas of usage, and they make calls at appropriate rate limits. So all these things sort of come forward at that point. After people are using your API, you really want to understand which APIs are most popular, which are less, what are most active developers, which operations they yield the most value, et cetera. So you need to get some insight in how your API program is performing. So you need to have some analytics, some reporting. And lastly, obviously, your backend services don't stay constant, right? They always change, so you need to manage lifecycle, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many concerns that you have to address.
Okay.
And that's where API management comes in, right? So API management helps customers to quickly expose their backend services APIs for consumption by communities of developers, be it a partner, internal or external, and do it quickly and do it reliably and with minimal risk.
Mm-hmm. So can I ask,
sure.
So for the API, you are talking about the REST APIs mm-hmm. exposed to the internet users, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm jumping ahead here. Will these APIs be hosted by Azure or hosted by customers?
Great question. The Azure API Management Service obviously is hosted in Azure.
Mm-hmm.
But the backend services that we help manage can be hosted anywhere. Azure is a great place to do it. Other clouds are also, you know, appropriate. They could be on premises. So they could be really anywhere as long as they are reachable from the cloud.
I see. Okay.
So API management, you know, helps with those concerns. And Microsoft recently acquired the company called Epiphany, which developed this Azure-based API management product. I came to Microsoft through that acquisition. I used to sort of look after product development at Epiphany. And in the span of 5-6 months with our awesome team, we actually integrated this product into Azure and sort of made it available to customers. And now I'm going to show you, you know, what the product looks like and how it works. Before I do that, so I just want to show you all the moving parts in the product so that you understand, you know, better the demo that I'm going to show you. So everything starts with a backend service, right? It could be on-premises, other clouds, Azure, obviously. Any technology could be used to develop it, doesn't really matter, right? We integrate at the protocol level. Azure API Management has three significant components. One is Publisher Portal. That's, you know, control cockpit for the API program, right? That's where publishers come in and manage the API program. That's where they onboard the APIs. This is where they interact with their developer ecosystem. This is where they look at the analytics and reports and do many other things. Second piece is developer portal. That's a public face of your API to developers. Mm-hmm. This is where they can learn how to use the API, register to use it, and get the first call in minutes, right? That's what this developer portal is for. And then the secret source is the proxy, very scalable component, which mediates calls between applications that developers write and your backend services and implements that facade we talked about, right? Mm-hmm. It does all sorts of handling and processing and metering of the traffic on your behalf according to the sort of policies that you set in the publisher portal. Mm-hmm. So those are three pieces, and at that point I'm going to go into a demo and show you how it all works.
Mm-hmm. Actually, before you go to the demo, sure. I have a question regarding the connectivity piece. Let's say if I have a service running on my legacy server, mm-hmm. it might be behind my firewalls, sitting on the net, doesn't have a static IP, mm-hmm. it's only exposed to my internal network. Mm-hmm. How do I, in that case, expose the service to it?
Great question. So at this time, mm-hmm. We actually work only with services which are exposed through firewall, and you can do it, you know, through a proxy on your side, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We actually working on hybrid solutions to enable those scenarios much better, mm-hmm. Using some other Microsoft components, using things like VPN. Okay. So that's something that we're definitely focusing on, but okay. right now, we assume that your service is accessible.
Okay, understood.
So, you know, you can create a new instance, go into the, you know, the service right now is in public preview, mm-hmm. right? So it's subject to all the standard terms of Azure public preview. It can be instantiated by going to new app services, API management. We have our new beautiful icon here, and clicking create. So there's a two-step process. You know, URL is essentially your namespace, you know, that your service will receive. So you just choose a subdomain that is unique. Mm-hmm. We can say something like CC demo, right? Mm-hmm. Then, you know, we have right now at preview developer and standard tiers. They vary in price and capabilities. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I'm gonna just use developer. You know, obviously, you need to choose one of the subscriptions that you want this service to reside in, and mm-hmm. the region where it should appear, right? So, and we are present in 6 regions today. Mm-hmm. Next step is organization name. This is how you want to present your API program name to the world. Let's say you are Contoso mm-hmm. Incorporated. So you probably want to say Contoso API team or Contoso APIs or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then administrator email is an email for the admin of this instance, right? So you might want to, you know, submit a personal email address, organizational email address, or an alias for a group of people. So it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go with creating it because it takes a few minutes. So I already pre-created a service. So I'm going to show you next the experience that you have with existing service in the portal. So here, you know, it's very standard. You get this quick start page. On this quick start page, you have some links to additional documentation and tutorials. In the dashboard, you can actually look at the activity mm-hmm. of your APIs, aggregate activity, in terms of calls, and some additional information, like where developer portal is and things like that. On the scale page, you can choose to upgrade to a different SKU. And in standard, you can actually also scale up to 4 units of use. And then also, you get this subdomain of Azure to start with, but you can definitely change that and create your custom domain names, both for your portal and for your APIs. Mm. So, and here you can sort of define what they are and upload certificates to secure them. So that's really the experience. So now there are two buttons here, manage and browse, right? So browse brings you to developer portal. Mm-hmm. Manage brings you into a management experience. Mm-hmm. Let me just show you.
So this developer portal is specific to this API you're managing?
Developer portal will be specific to this API program that you're trying to create, within your organization. Any organization can have multiple of these, mm-hmm. or just single one, depending on the needs. But this is sort of a standalone website, essentially a portal, that is a public face of your API.
Okay.
And here, as you can see, it looks, pretty nice out of the box. But mm-hmm. the great thing is that you can actually customize the appearance of this portal, as well as content of this portal, to suit your brand requirements and sort of preferences. So it's fully customizable experience out of the box. We try to give you a nice experience, but you can change all of that. You can change colors, fonts, and all the other things.
Nice.
So that's a developer portal. And now, as a publisher, you are interested in managing it, right? So you jump into a management experience, right? Which gives you a bunch of options sort of to work with the product. So first thing you probably would do, and by the way, product comes actually pre-configured with a sample API, so it's easy for you sort of to play and understand how things work. But what we're going to do is we're going to assume that we're going to create a new API, and it's going to be a very simple API just to notionally demonstrate mm-hmm. The capabilities of the product.
Yeah, now here comes the interesting part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So adding API is quite simple. So you basically give it a title, and here we're going to create a calculator API. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is give the URL to the backend service, right? This web service that we want to expose into the API. And I'm going to say it's going to, I know that it is at calc API, mm-hmm. cloudapp.net API. And we provision this domain name for us, right? That would be a base name for all of our APIs. And our APIs will be differentiated by suffixes for this domain name, by path mm-hmm. underneath. So I'm going to say, at this address, at this base address, that would be the place where you can find this calculator API that I'm exposing, which actually is implemented by the service at this address.
Understood.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So at this point, I press save. And that's pretty much it, right? You registered an endpoint, mm-hmm. right? Of course, the best experience would be if you add as much metadata as you can about your API so that we can actually produce the documentation that is comprehensive, accurate, and appealing to developers, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to really work on your documentation because documentation is one of the critical factors in the adoption of your APIs, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go and now define resources for mm-hmm. this particular API. So I'm going to go to operations and add operation here. And for operation, I have to choose the verb that I want to use. And here is, I'm going to use get. Mm-hmm. And the original backend service has the following URL template for this particular operation. Parameters to it are passed as query parameters. So there are two operands that are passed as query parameters. Mm-hmm. Now, that is okay, looks fine, right? But a little bit difficult to write. So let's simplify it. Let's just use rewrite URL capability here mm-hmm. And change that to the following. So I'm going to now pass the operands as path parameters. Much simpler, much faster to write. You don't have to remember question marks and signs and equal signs and things like that. So at this point, you need to give this operation a name, and we're going to call it add to integers, and say that it returns a sum of two operands. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah. So that's good. So what we did is we simplified actually how this back-end operation looks from the outside. So we actually simplified the access and consumption of this API. So now we can also provide additional description to parameters themselves. So here, for the first parameter, we can say, this is a first operand. And the cool thing is that this is actually a markup, right? So you can actually do fancy things here, such as, for instance, we're going to introduce default value, right? We're going to say the default value for this guy is, and I'm going to use code tag, 51, let's say, right? And we're going to say like this. Let me just select it over here. And moreover, I can actually say that it is of type number. Mm-hmm. And I actually define the range of values, and in here I'm going to say that the value that I want sort of by default be used here to be 51. Oh, I'm going to do here similar thing for the second operand, and we're going to to get a round 100, we're going to say that it's going to be 49. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a number, and we're going to say 49 over here. So I provided additional documentation. I could have gone and added additional query parameters, or actually described the responses, and for each responses could be multiple. It could be different codes, right? Response status codes for HTTP, 200, 400, whatever. Mm-hmm. And for each of those, I can specify actually what the response would look like for all the content type that I'm supporting. So quite elaborate and very comprehensive way to describe API. Mm-hmm. But we're going to stop here in the interest of time. So at this point, I can actually save this operation. So I've got an API with one operation. Alternatively, I could have imported it, actually. We have this import capability where you can actually describe the API in text format, and we support a few, and then import it, and so that you can avoid manual sort of interactive entry.
I see.
So at that point, we have an API. Before this API becomes available, you really want to package it. And sometimes you want to combine sort of multiple APIs into one bundle, mm-hmm. Which is covered by the same terms of use, which has some associated usage limits, et cetera. So here, we're going to just do very simple. We're going to create a basic math product. And this product, we're going to say, TBD description, right? So for us, obviously you want to provide some meaningful descriptions, but we're going to just skip it for now. So in this basic math product, now you need to add an API, and we're going to just add, our calculator API to it, right? And at this point, you just need to push it out, make it available. Now, what's interesting is...
Oh, that's already done?
It's already done.
Oh, okay.
So at this point, imagine we registered the backend URL, mm-hmm. we changed the way it looks to the developers, yep. and then we pushed it out. At which point, we actually generated documentation for it and some samples, and I'm going to show you it next. But one thing I want to draw your attention to is that basic math right now is available only to administrators. So developers coming to the portal cannot see it yet, mm-hmm. right? Because we're still working on it. So at this point, let's go to the portal. And look at the product section, and you see our basic math product here published. At this point, we can go and look at the APIs, and you can see that our calculator API is here.
Nice.
So clicking on it gets you our operation. We have a single operation; it's right there, with all descriptions, nicely formatted. Shows you what the request URL will look like, and as you can see on this request URL, we have path parameters, mm-hmm. not query parameters, right? So we change the way the API looks. And now you can also look at some samples in a variety of popular programming languages that you can actually copy and paste into your code and get cranking. But you don't even have to do that to call this API, right? You can actually just go to the what do we call console,
mm-hmm.
and basically select a key, right? So each subscription, you know, generates a couple of keys, mm-hmm. so you can use and rotate them for security reasons. And then over here, you can just make a call. And when you make a call, and hopefully I entered everything right, you're going to get a response. And at this point, you know, we correctly calculated that it's 100. Mm-hmm. And as you see, it comes in as XML. Mm-hmm. We can do multiple calls, right? And we can see that you know, each call has shaded latency, and you know, we are staying consistently at 5 milliseconds right there, right?
Nice.
Very nice. But there is more. There is more magic that we can apply without, you know, touching the actual backend service. So one thing you probably noticed is that it's XML. Mm-hmm. Why don't we modernize this service and also enable people to developers to get responses in JSON format, which is much more popular these days, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
So why don't we do that? For that, we have this special policy engine, right? Very powerful. It allows you to set policies at a variety of scopes, and those scopes, you know, compound to form effective scope. And I'll show you how that works. What the what policies are simply processing steps that are applied to requests and responses mm-hmm. as they flow through the proxy. Mm-hmm. And you can then configure them at multiple scopes. So at this point, I'm going to say, for this particular operation, I could have done it at the API level, so it's just arbitrary right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to configure a policy to convert XML to JSON. And by the way, you can see that rewrite URI, even though that was sort of a very simple interactive experience, it's in fact generated a policy, right? And inserted in the policy definition this rewrite URL policy, which states how you want to change the appearance of URL. So here in the outbound section, right, which is basically on the way out of the proxy and to the caller, mm-hmm. we're going to insert JSON P. Non-JSONP. We're going to get to JSONP later, but now we are talking about converting XML to JSON. Mm-hmm. So very simple XML kind of grammar, self-explanatory. So there are a couple of ways we can do conversion, and we obviously prefer not exhaustive but friendly to you know, JavaScript friendly. We want to apply it not always, but only if content type is XML, right? So it's smart, you know, it doesn't really applicable if it's not XML, because that's what exactly what it does, right? Mm-hmm. And then we also want to take into consideration accept header, right? So if accept header, you know, requires JSON, mm-hmm. then and the content coming back is XML, then this policy will kick in, right? Otherwise, it's not.
Yeah, makes sense.
So at this point, let's save this and go back. Let's make a call.
Sure,
XML coming, you know, it's still XML, right? Nothing changed. Because obviously I didn't request JSON yet. Mm-hmm. So let me request JSON. I'm going to say accept application JSON. So I put a header which says I want to get a response in JSON. Mm-hmm. And at this point, if you call, you're going to see that you, you know, immediately get a response in JSON format. So again, without touching the backend service, we changed the way it appears to the outside world.
Nice.
Next thing we can try is, you know, again, very common these days, is ability. You know, the other thing I actually want to show before we get to this is caching. Right, caching is very powerful. Mm-hmm. In this case, it does not really make a lot of sense because the payload is very small and it's very fast anyway. But we're going to just show the capability so you guys are aware of it. So in fact, you actually can apply various caching policies up to operation base. You can cache the whole API, you can cache certain operations, so it's up to you, and you can set different policies for all of it. And so if you go into add interest, you can see this, there's this caching, right? So we expose, again, the policy in a very easy to consume way. So here I can say, well, you know what, why don't we just cache this for 10 seconds, you know, for this particular operation. Mm-hmm. Let's do save. At that point, if you go and look at the policy on this operation, you're going to see that cache policy, cache lookup, and cache store were added, right? Mm-hmm. So at that point, we can go and try it out. So let's make a few calls.
So this cache is hosted along the APIs.
Right. So this, imagine there is a backend service, there is API management. Mm-hmm. API management offers response caching capability and has cache allocated for responses that coming out of the backend service, mm-hmm. so that when developer applications call the backend service, mm-hmm. for those operations that are cached, mm-hmm. according to the cache settings, we're going to be returning those responses out of our cache without mm-hmm. even calling the backend service.
Yeah.
So they can actually scale to much higher loads without beefing up the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So very powerful. So you don't have to do anything on your side. Mm-hmm. You can do everything in the platform. Mm-hmm. Again, you're adding additional capability to this backend service by just, you know, configuring some policies.
Okay. So I guess for the API caching, the cache itself is distributed, right? If the request is routed to one server, I can still leverage cache from different instances.
Great question. Yes, exactly. It is a distributed cache, and it works exactly like you described.
I see. Thank you.
So now we applied caching policy, right? So you can actually start using it. So if we do a call, you know, there was a little bit of a cache set up there. Now we start calling, and you see that the latency actually is dropping to 1 millisecond. So 5 times drop using cache. And even on this small response size, you know, there's good bang for the buck, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So let's go set some more policies, right? So for this, at this point, why don't we just go and set policies on the at the API level? So it's very common today to allow access to APIs from JavaScript, and now we support JSON, so it's great. But for that, you really need to account for cross-domain access restrictions,
yep.
right? So you want to set some cross-domain policies. So let's apply some. So in this case, I'm going to apply two policies. First, I'm going to put JSONP in, mm-hmm. right? And you know, all you need to do is supply a callback parameter name. And then I can also apply something like course policy. And course allows you, you know, very exhaustive configuration here about, you know, loud headers and the regions, but I'm going to just simplify it, and I'm going to just define an allowed origin. And I'm going to say that allowed origin would be Microsoft.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, let's save this guy. And if you go to the operational level, right, and try to see the effective policy, you'll see that there's all compound policies I applied. There is an origin policy defined at API level and JSONP, but they are sort of applied to also compounded with the operations policies, right? So very powerful capability to mm-hmm. layer things, mm-hmm. right?
So there's an inheritance structure of policies.
Very, very similar, yeah, yeah. How it works in sort of programming languages, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we have those two policies. So let's go and see if they actually work. So for, you know, JSONP, you obviously need JSON. So we're going to leave the header in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, what you want to do is you want to say, okay, what kicks it off is if you're going to say CF, right, callback function name, equals some function, you know, let's say process data or something, data, right? So at this point, if I call this function, I'm going to get a wrapped response, right? So JSONP policy, again, without touching a service, mm-hmm. we just applied and make it compliant with JSONP idiom, right, for cross-domain access.
Really nice.
We can also, you know, if you are, for instance, doing cross-domain requests from the browser, right, usually what happens if you are coming from a different domain,
mm-hmm.
you get this origin header. And if origin header does not match allowed origins, so basically you get nothing. So yeah. let's take a look and say, if origin is contoso.com, right? Mm-hmm. Which is not allowed in our case,
yep.
because we allow just Microsoft.com,
mm-hmm.
right? And let's make a call. You can see that there is no response.
I see.
But if you say that you are coming from Microsoft.com, then you should see complete response. And you do?
Yeah, sure.
So course is not as easy to implement, but again, with just dropping a snippet of XML, right, you acquired a new capability. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I want to show just one last thing. There's this magical header, OCP APIM trace.true. So this works only for administrators, for debugging the APIs, right? Because essentially what happens now is there's a backend service and then there's this black box and then there's you, right, mm-hmm. who are trying to test it. Mm-hmm. And without that capability, it would be kind of hard. So, but we have this wonderful header that you said.
But when you say this only works for administrators.
Administrators, yeah.
How do I identify myself as an administrator? Do I use a different key?
Well, so you log in into the administrative portal as administrator, okay. right? And then you transition. So basically your identity flows, right? Okay. So whoever owns this service, whoever enters the APIs and configures them have access to this functionality today.
Okay.
So with that, if you make a call, what you're going to see is you get a header in the response, right, which you can just open and look exactly at what happened during the processing of this request on both inbound and outbound. So it's a long document and it tells you which policies have been applied, why they applied, which policies did not apply, what URL the service was forwarded to, what response has been received. So full information about the execution of each particular request can mm-hmm. be gotten with this. So nice. Very nice debugging tool, and you know, I myself preparing to this actually, you know, used it to iron out some kinks, you know, some errors that I made when entering the APIs. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of briefly the capabilities of the product. You know, before we sort of wrap up, I want to show you one more thing. So in the management portal, there is this powerful reporting that we do. And we have actually four kinds of reports. We have at a glance, which basically give you at a glance a look at how your API ecosystem is performing. Who are your top developers? Mm-hmm. Who are your, which are your top products? Top APIs, et cetera, right? And you can see, you know, total calls, blocked calls, you know, failed calls, et cetera. So that's, you know, and then compound graph for four most interesting things about your API program is calls, response time, bandwidth, and errors. But also, we can drill down into usage, and we can not only show you the usage in terms of calls and bandwidth, but we can show you where that traffic originated from, right, as well.
Really
so
nice.
We do sort of IP to location to do that. Health report is very interesting for sort of looking at how your API system is performing, right? So we show you calls, errors on a graph. Here there's no errors, you know, but you can see sort of distribution of calls between successful, blocked errors, you know, failed calls, et cetera. Mm-hmm. In the cache, you can actually see information about performance of your cache. So if you look at today's data, you can see that, you know, when I enabled cache, right, there are some operations that were producing misses and some that produces cache hits, right? And see mm-hmm. how my hit-miss ratio is pretty good here, yep. right? You can also look at performance characteristics of your API, and we show you average and max and min, and we show you also, you know, how this performance is distributed across the globe mm-hmm. as well, right?
Yeah, it's very comprehensive information.
Very comprehensive yeah. information. And activity, you know, is also is where you can actually get information about every product, every developer, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, all of those reports are available for, you know, preset periods of time, arbitrary periods of time, and at any level, right? Aggregate or by operation or by API or by product. So you can really sort of drill down into just one operation here.
Nice.
So let's talk a little bit about, so right now I showed you sort of management experience, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the developer experience? So let me just log out from the developer portal, because right now I'm signed in as administrator. So mm-hmm. let me sign out. And sign in back as a developer. So for developers, as you can see, we actually offer external identities that you can use to log in, right? You don't have to create an account, but I did. So in my case, I'm going to just use my local account that I created to log in as a developer. Mm-hmm. So I'm in. Now, you remember when we created the product, I mentioned that this product basic math was available only to admins. Mm-hmm. So now if I'm as Vladimir Vinogradsky developer come in, I don't see it.
Yeah.
And I can't access it, right? And it doesn't show neither in APIs nor in the products. And mm-hmm. since we have one API, we just jump into it, and this is Echo API. Mm-hmm. As a developer, I can also submit applications for to be featured in the application gallery. Mm-hmm. I can report any issues that I have on the support forum and communicate back to the API publisher. I can also go and view my profile. And in my profile, I actually have information about my subscriptions, which I can manage or cancel. Mm-hmm. I can close my account right here. I can register an application for submission to application gallery, as I said. I can regenerate my keys if they got compromised. I can manage the keys for each of the subscriptions that I have. Mm-hmm. And I also have access to the same pretty much analytics capability that administrator has, right? Mm-hmm. Only that view is constrained just for my usage, obviously. I don't see across all developers, but only my subscriptions, my usage, right? Okay. Yeah, but you can have, you know, you see exactly the same usage, health, all the same reports. So you have actually ability to understand how you're using the APIs as well, not only for administrators that they can see sort of across the API program. Mm-hmm. Very powerful for developers, right? Nice mm-hmm. experience. You come in, you have interactive documentation, you have interactive console, you've got ability to drill in into how you're using it, manage your subscriptions, subscribe, mm-hmm. and even use external identity.
Yep.
This is really sort of great for adoption of the API. Yeah.
I like the interactive console, where you can just go there and try it out. I think that's great.
So what we're striving for is just getting developers to first call literally within minutes, right? So when you land to this portal, mm-hmm. I kid you not, within a minute, I can interact with the API, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very powerful.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. So that's pretty much it. So there is much more in the product, obviously, but you know the time is limited. So this is what we sort of we discussed the highlights.
Okay.
Yeah,
this is great. But before we wrap up, I do have a couple of more questions. The first, when we call the APIs, what are the authentication options? You showed we can authenticate using a key. Mm-hmm. But for my existing customers, they may want to like to integrate like with my Windows Azure Active Directory mm-hmm. or other authentications?
Great question. So today, we support key authentication, essentially, mm-hmm. right? Key mm-hmm. validation. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you already have authentication mechanisms deployed within your service, mm-hmm. they are passed through. So you still can use them.
Okay.
We are definitely very keen on adding additional other authentication options mm-hmm. to the product. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. You know, it's not going to be long when we're going to start rolling in new authentication options. And definitely Windows, Azure Active Directory is something that we're looking very closely at to integrate with.
Okay. And the other thing was about to create the API definitions. Mm-hmm. Let's say if I have an old WCF service, mm-hmm. I have my Visto file, mm-hmm. can I just import those and automatically create something?
You just, just giving me cues, right, to promise more. So absolutely, today, again, as I said, this is first release, mm-hmm. Which has got, to market. And some of the things that, we wanted to support, we just didn't have time to. But all this is coming. So OData, web API, ability to sort of publish those easily, definitely is coming.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You mean the ASP.NET MVC web APIs?
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Okay. So we have, we actually been running an extensive private preview with lots of customers, and we heard this feedback on and on, right, mm-hmm. about, support of those, easily onboarding those kind of APIs. So we definitely, this is a high priority for us.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. I guess this is it. This is a great introduction. I learned a lot about this new service, and I can't wait to try it out myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for all the viewers. And let's hope Nick and Chris will come back next time. Otherwise, I'm going to take over this show and never give them back to them. Thank you very much.
Bye.